I'm going to start with what may seem like a tangent, but it's really essential to all of what we're trying to do here, I think. So first, to talk about federalism and legal authority and the U.S. Constitution, which you may or may not have read recently from cover to cover, in it is the clear recognition that health is the responsibility of the states. And the CDC currently runs the NNDSS, and the slide sort of gives a little history there, that the Public Health Service has been collecting reports sent voluntarily by states since 1893, and all states have participated since 1928. Those of you who might be new to the United States, there were fewer states in 1928 than there are now, but that is still a true statement. And then the CST, Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists, position statements establish the best practices for state-based surveillance, essentially national standard criteria. And then another small seeming tangent, and that's on semantics. First, on the process of reporting and notification, we try to use the term reporting to describe case or lab report sent to state or local health agency versus notification, which is when information is sent by a state health agency to a federal health agency, usually CDC. This terminology is relatively new, dating to the adoption of the international health regulations about 4 or 5 years ago now. And then the term case definition, which is a somewhat outdated term, although we all still use it, but the problem is that it means different things in different contexts. The case reporting definition is case reporting criteria. A case classification definition are the classification criteria, and the two are not the same. They are different purposes. So when you hear someone use that phrase, case definition, and you're not clear what they're referring to, ask. Okay, so that takes me to the slide showing the conditions on the official 2009 nationally notifiable condition list adopted by CSD in June. I should say that older CSD position statements do not include case reporting criteria. They are limited to case classification criteria, which are on those older position statements labeled case definition. But what you see here in this list is the chronic disease of cancer, the environmental occupational conditions of lead, pesticide, and silicosis, and then infectious diseases are on the next slide. Yes, there's quite a few there, and you can't read them from probably even the first row. I think there's 67 by my count on this slide. You can find the full list in a readable form on the CSDE.org website. So let's talk about how these things get there. There's a template for placing diseases or conditions under national surveillance. It provides, in that template, indications, instructions to authors on how to put the various pieces together, starting with the time frame for reporting, which can be either immediate or routine, and state rules vary on this. But again, CSD is establishing the best practices, the national standard. Criteria for case reporting, that section in the template includes, as listed there, the narrative tables and data elements. Criteria for case classification is another section in the template. And then something I'll say a little more about later, CSD is developing technical guides for case identification, which will include case identification algorithms and standard codes. So let's start with talking about criteria for reporting in the narrative section. The instructions are describe the reporting criteria which trigger the case reports. So that's what the authors are expected to do in these position statements. I use the word structure in quotes on this slide, because the narratives are often somewhat unstructured. But what they contain is the criteria to be used for used by humans, in distinction with the criteria to be used by machines, which are in the tables and the technical guides. So let's talk about the tables. They're essentially a logic diagram using AND/OR logic, with a separate column for each condition subtype. Follow the same structure as you saw in the narrative, and each criterion or row in the table is categorized as either sufficient or necessary. But criteria can also be categorized as optional, absent, or corroborative. And essentially, the tables are a bridge between the narratives and the technical guides. This very simplified example is the AND/OR logic, and I'll just read it because the way the brackets are set up and the ANDs and ORs are set up, I think captures the both the complexity and the simplicity of this logic. That's a case should be reported if A is present and X or Y, or B is present and Y or Z, or C is present and X or Z. That's a very simplified example of something you'll see in the next slide, which is the table for yellow fever. And this is, in fact, a very simplified. This is 9 selected rows from the 28 rows in the yellow fever reporting table. Once again, S is sufficient, N is necessary, A is absent, C is corroborative, and O is optional. So this is a tabular version of the simplified AND/OR logic that was on the prior slide. Some conditions have less complexity than yellow fever, but most have this much or more. Anthrax, for example, has 40 rows with 5 different clinical presentations. Technical guides, that, as I said before, will be developed and contain algorithms that are the criteria for reporting, having that if-then logic I've just described, meaning if the criteria are met, then the case is reportable. And the technical guides will be the machine-based criteria, the algorithms and codes. Let's see, I'm going to skip over the details of LOINC and SNOMED, although if you've got questions about it, you can ask, but I do want to focus on the very last piece down here, the quantitative result piece of the SNOMED. And that's because the quantitative result needs to be specified where a threshold value defines a positive. And that's a little less simple than having a simple code, yes or no, because laboratory results come often with these quantitative scales. It's very important to us in CSD to see some evaluation of these reporting criteria. This is, for us as epidemiologists, a relatively new concept. We have previously not been detailed and explicit in what we tell the reporting entities we want from them. And this is a level of detail that is frankly daunting to some or perhaps even many epidemiologists. The question that is being asked now is the one in quotes there. How well will these work? And the only way we'll know that is if we actually do careful evaluation studies. I'm hopeful that the Centers of Excellence in Public Health Informatics that are funded by CDC, as well as other academics, will do evaluations that will reveal the false positives and the false negatives, the missed cases. But I recognize that we need to follow sort of standard evaluation principles. Evaluation needs to be iterative and collaborative. Disease-specific data elements are expected to be included in all reports of individual cases, regardless of whether those reports come to health agencies by telephone, by use of standard paper-based forms, or electronically. Those are expected to be specified in the CSD position statements. They go beyond the common core data elements that we have as table one in the template, so that the author can skip over those on the presumption that those common data elements are always to be reported. Public health authorities do not expect that the initial case report will contain all of the information necessary for case investigation and case classification for all cases reported for all conditions. Because the process of case investigation, as it says on the slide, often requires obtaining further information either from a clinician or directly from a case. So that's a rather quick summary of our process so far. Next steps that remain, our Public Health Informatics Subcommittee, which is part of the Surveillance Informatics Steering Committee, will provide oversight for development of the technical guides. Again, we expect it to be a collaborative process involving the CDC and NICFI-funded Centers of Excellence, as well as CSD and CDC subject matter experts and CDC NICFI staff. But the timeline is not yet finalized for those technical reports. And the second bullet then refers to condition-specific data element standardization, which some of you are up at well, I'm a West Coast person, so it was a ridiculously early hour this morning for a meeting of the case reporting standardization work group, but that's expected to provide oversight for the development of the condition-specific data element standardizations, focusing on, in particular, fields that are present for multiple conditions. And then my final slide is acknowledgments to a large number of people. So my apology in that for the tiny print if you happen to be someone whose name is on this slide, but you can't read it in the back of the room. And then, John, I guess it's up to you, too, whether we're going to have questions now or at the end of the panel.
Yes, actually, I think we have time for a couple of questions. So why don't we allow the opportunity now for the audience to ask.
At the CSD annual meeting in Buffalo, New York, in June of this year, we adopted roughly 70 position statements that includes the case reporting criteria in each for mostly infectious diseases, but there's, I think, five non-infectious conditions. Four. It's four. I'm looking to. Yes, it's cancer, silicosis, pesticide, and lead, I believe, are the.
Why are there
I can, but it'll take me a moment.
Why are there different columns?
Each column corresponds to a different clinical presentation or a different condition subtype. So actually, that's the very first line in this slide, that each column is a different presentation, a different subtype. So,
suspect or probable or confirmed?
No, that doesn't have to do with classification. It has to do with things like let's say anthrax. There's cutaneous anthrax, there's inhalational anthrax. Each would be a separate column.
So specifically for yellow fever?
I'm sorry, I'm not a yellow fever. Any yellow fever experts in the room? I just happened to pick this one because it had a nice combination of rows and columns. Not because I know anything about it. It had all the letters. I was looking for one that had all the letters in it.
But if you were to walk through and go down, I think if you had the two sufficient for column one, that would warrant a case report, right?
Yep.
So, we are in the process of updating the old Dwyer table. So we are looking for actually looking at the technical guides we're speaking about, which may be finalized, but maybe the timeline has not been specified. Is there a way to get access to those technical guides for review or for comments in the CST webpage?
Neither the work plan nor the timeline for development of the technical guides has been established yet. The sort of first draft of the technical guides will consist of some of the information that was included in some earlier drafts of the position statements. Information that was on algorithms and codes that was developed by a contractor for CSD, a group called Orion, Ontoreason, mainly done by Cecil Lynch, who might even be in the audience. Cecil here today? No. Okay. He's here at the meeting, but those tables and lists have been taken out of the position statements to be put in the separately in the technical guides, and I believe and Lisa perhaps can comment on this separately stored. But until we have a work plan that says this is how we're going to do this, and this is the work group that's going to work on it, and this is how often we're going to meet, and et cetera, I don't know how accessible those draft documents are. You want to make a comment on that, Lisa?
They're all currently on my computer. In terms of formalizing them, that hasn't been done yet. We're working with Cecil Lynch to update the position statement where the case definitions were changed at the meeting, and getting updated coding and logic support that represents those modified position statements.
John, go ahead.
Question back there. No, we'll do.
Hi, I wonder, I don't know if it's in a part of the screen I can't see, but since you mentioned conditions like cancer and silicosis, I wonder how do you conceive of striving or accessing occupational data from the records? Do you have a method for doing that?
Let's see. A couple of different answers to that question. First, what I didn't describe here was a separate process for the state reportable condition assessment, where we ask on an annual basis, and this is a joint CDC-CSD survey assessment, we're calling it, that asks the state epidemiologist to say whether each of 180 or something like that conditions is more, 250, it's a large number now, is reportable in their jurisdiction, and whether stratified by different reporting entities, so clinicians, laboratories, hospitals, and other, and whether the reporting is contingent. So it could be that it's reportable only if there's an outbreak. It could be reporting only for work-related cases. And that's one approach to this that is independent in some ways of what the reporting criteria are. So if a condition is work-related only, like silicosis, say, then the criteria for reporting would include that as a criterion. And as a necessary, probably labeled an N in the table like this, criterion. There is another piece, though, that I think you're alluding to, and that's the when the case report comes from the reporter, whether it's a laboratory or a clinician or a hospital, to the local or state health agency, does it include information on the occupation of the individual who is the case being reported? And that's a separate question that has to do with the data elements, and I think I had a slide on data elements actually in the talk, that we had as a separate process a position statement that we adopted, CSD adopted in Buffalo in June, asking for CDC to create a process, to establish and maintain a process for those data elements. And that position statement has not yet been responded to by CDC. We're hopeful that they will do that. And then there will be active discussion about whether the data elements to be included in the initial case report should always include as a common element for all conditions, all cases, all the time, occupation. So maybe that's more than you asked, but.
I think we had.
Was one more question, I think, or two? Local epidemiologists in local health agencies are active members in CSD. In fact, CSD has steering committees, one for infectious diseases, one for chronic and MCH, and one for environmental occupational injury epidemiology. Current chair of the Infectious Disease Steering Committee is a local epidemiologist, Lauren Mascola from Los Angeles. And she is, by virtue of being elected to the executive board, to that position for the Steering Committee for Infectious Diseases, she is a member of the executive board, so she's part of the leadership of CSD.
Place of employment may be captured, but the actual occupation is not on the criterion sheet. It's actually captured by, say, Cerner, for example, or one of the healthcare systems that's putting out the EMR. Whenever you talk about actually incorporating those logistics in there, what mechanism do you plan to capture that with? Would you go outside the box? I mean, secondary data source?
Well, yeah. we're treading a little bit into your data element territory, but let me try to distinguish some different lists of data elements that people tend to kind of jumble together. And I think it's useful to keep them mentally separate, if not physically separate, when you make lists of data elements. The first is that, and this is the most relevant to what we're talking about here today in the criteria for case reporting, that something like this table for yellow fever, each one of these rows is a criterion which contributes in some way to making the decision about whether or not a case should be reported to public health. You make from this a list of data elements, and you say this needs to be present or absent to have the criteria met to trigger that case report in an electronic health record, for example. One of the things that's not going to be on that list of data elements is, well, the patient's name or the patient's address, because it doesn't matter. That's not an important part of that list of data elements, the ones we're using for triggering a case reporting. But then once that decision's been made to trigger the case report, then the case report is going to have a different list of data elements. It's going to have, well, the patient's name, and it's going to have the patient's address, and so on. So that's a separate list of data elements. Some of the DOE's data elements will not include these ones that were in the triggers for reporting. So it's not the same list, not only because it's got some additional things like a patient's name, but we may not care about something that's on this criteria for reporting list, So therefore, it's not part of the data elements we expect to see in the initial case report. However, it may be something we're interested in, and maybe something we're interested in only in for some of the cases. So there's a third list of data elements, and that's the ones where we want them for some, maybe even most, of the cases that we get reported to us in public health. So we then go back and ask for some cases for the reporting entity to give us that further information. That's usually called the case investigation phase. But there's, as part of case investigation, there's yet another list of data elements that we're trying to obtain, maybe not on all the patients, and therefore we don't need all those things in the initial case report. And then when we make, in public health, our notification to CDC as part of the standard process for the nationally notifiable conditions, we send CDC some, but not all, of the data elements that we've collected during case investigation. For example, we don't send CDC the name. and there's other things that we don't send, but CDC, in collaboration with CSD, has come up with a list of data elements that are expected to be included in that notification, and they are specified in the, help me with the terminology in this, John, this is where I'm a little, the message mapping guides for case notification. I got the term right. So does that help?
Well, yeah, I understood that part. I was just looking for fields that actually don't exist. If you were using it as an absolute criteria or a necessary criteria to determine whether or not this should be a case that was investigated, and it didn't exist in the system that it was coming from, where would you know? How would you make that a necessary field that was populated if it didn't exist?
This is a consensus process, and like I said in one of the slides, this set of criteria for case reporting needs to be evaluated. So if there are ways in which individual criteria need to be modified, eliminated, added because they're not there, that's the kind of feedback on these case reporting criteria tables that we need to hear.
So maybe even a part of that is really about the discussion about meaningful use, you know, the type of data that's necessary to be able to identify a case. So coming back to that concept of meaningful use and contributing to that, because I think what the implications of as I think it's CMS that's leading this process and defining all of this, is really the certification of electronic medical record systems and the ability to have specific data elements as a part of that, not only just for the case criteria for identification, but also for the reporting piece. So
I'm done.
Thank you.